with palms upward. Ready to receive the many blessings that are constantly streaming and being bestowed upon us. Let us recite the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Inayat Khan towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit. And take the blessing that these words have formed in your own mouth and blow into your hands. And take your hands and allow the blessing to stream over you and through you as a blessing from above. So yesterday we talked, or heard it read from this paper, about the psychological dimension of our practice and how it often necessitates in our being this longing and this need for forgiveness. And I'd like to ask, is the sound of the fan disturbing for you? I think it's better to have it stronger so we can have air. And I only mention that on the videotape also, if people hear the sound in the background. Just take it as the drone of the universe here to support the practice and to also cool and relieve us in this space. So as we began yesterday, let us share in the purification breaths as given to us by Hazrat Inayat Khan with the accompanying phrases. And I can't emphasize how important this practice is as a daily practice. You know, there are impressions all around us, seen and unseen. They come in through all the senses. And they make these impressions. And then it's almost like taking glass and scratching it. And pretty soon, the glass becomes so marred, or the mirror, things are no longer clear. And we think that's the way the world is. We can no longer see the reflection of the divine. Or can we no longer can see out through the heart to see the world around us as it is? It's so limited through these impressions. And we all have them. It always is there. And not only that, my gosh, think about all of our cell phones and our computers and all those signals that are going from here to there. You know, we all are now on wireless and we're sending messages or phone messages. How do you think it gets from here to there? All these messages are always around us and through us. You know? And so these purification breaths, I'll tell you a sweet story of Nurship Diet remembering his father and mother doing this practice, now 93, that through his own admission, he was very precocious as a child. And his father, after his birth, and he got old enough to know, you know, it's known that Anayak Khan had a certain rhythm. And even if he was about to miss a train, he never ran. He never hurried. He said, another one will come. Only on the day of Mershith Diet, Hadayat's birth, did he run for his birth. And he said, you made your Abba run for you. So he changed his rhythm, interestingly enough, for Hadayat. Maybe interesting to just take that. But Mershith Hadayat talks about how when there was a moment when the bedroom was made available there where his mother and father slept, I guess he was in the next room because they wanted to keep him close, to keep an eye on him. But, you know, when they would come from the room and before the morning practice during the ablutions and preparation, he would run into the room and slide under the bed because he wanted to know what was going on in there. And he says he remembers his mother, and he could see his mother and father, and they would sit face to face, and his father was giving his mother this practice. Anayak Khan was giving Rani Amina Begum this practice, and they would do it, perform it together. You know, how extraordinary is that? And they also mention her name, because you know, he made her appear, Rani. His peer. He made her the equivalent, his partner. There's a beautiful story, I'll read it one day and you can listen to it online. We're in the process of republishing that book, Once Upon a Time. Hadayat remembers that initiation of his mother. Very beautiful story that he tells. But here's the practice. And it was done by Mershit himself, and he passed it along, and it has come to us in this form that he's given it to us in. And I like to say this because I think it's so important. You know, there's some impressions we want to keep, too. And he said, with this practice, that it is the practice that purifies and revivifies us. And he said, it ennobles the soul. And he also said, and I think this is so important and not to be overlooked, that this practice must be understood in order to have the mysteries of the esoteric practices revealed. So mastery of this is very important. And Mershid Hadayat has been very good in his instruction to me. I even have it in paper form. He wrote it to me to always remind people that the breath practices are what help us develop mastery. So don't forget them. If you feel maybe you're lacking direction or mastery or focus, or whatever, the breath can help that. and we know how important it is to be mindful of our breath when we're in the dances together, when you're turning, you're in the breath. The breath is, you're not turning, the breath is turning. And so this breath is so important, and knowing when the appropriate time to excite it and the appropriate time to calm it down, these things also can be discovered through the practice of the breath. Now, this breath is exceptional because almost all the other breath practices are done in a rhythmic pattern. And that, again, is very purposeful to help us develop mastery, you know, willing the breath to do certain things. But in this breath, it's different because Murshid Hazarat Anayat Khan gives us the instruction to get in touch with our natural breath, which I think that just that line right there is profound. Do we know what our natural breath is? And that the breath could be and should be a slightly fuller and deeper than the natural breath. And I would like to also say that one could consider it a kind of internal yoga. Because with that fuller breath, we're actually, you know, there's the potential to actually massage the internal organs and to move the breath through the more subtle channels of the body. So it follows a pattern that we're all familiar with, and we'll just go through it. Now here's the beautiful phrase that he gave us. Anyone can tell it?
Inhale divine light and light, and exhale divine life and light.
I inhale divine light and life, not just exhale. I radiate.
Irradiate, that's
divine.
Right. That's right.
Yes. And not irradiate, I radiate. I radiate divine life and light. And here's something very subtle. And one has to contemplate, why did Murshid give the phrase slightly different? On the inhalation, he instructs us to say light and life. And on the exhalation, he turns that life and light. I've spoken some about this, but if you don't recall, I ask you and invite you in the practice to continue to contemplate that. What's that little turn mean? How does that change what we're doing? So the first breath is in the nose and out the nose. In the nose and out the nose. And again, the purification breaths are different than the elemental breaths. And he did give this rhythmic pattern, I will say, especially for those people that were studying to be healing conductors in the Sufi movement, which he established, but that transmission has gone through the other Sufi organizations, that he gave the breath for those people in that training, breathing in Ya Shafi, out Ya Kafi. So we're familiar with that too. And he also gave that to people that were ill to use as a medicine for themselves. So, you know, who amongst us is doesn't have a little something that needs healing, right? So that's a good practice also. But in this way, he called this the purification breath, which was different than the healing. Okay, so I want to make that distinction. So we breathe in the nose and out the nose, and we breathe in. I inhale divine light and life, and as we breathe out, I radiate divine life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. as we breathe in and we breathe out, consider this, that every fiber of our being is participating in this divine breath. And that as we're breathing in, we're breathing in all the light and life from the all-pervading space. This means that as the stars and the planets radiate their own light and reflect the light of the sun, and the suns upon the suns of the various universes, they're all participating in this breath, and we're drawing that into our very being. And as we breathe out, we're radiating that same light, participating in all life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Let the breath really move through the entire being. Your whole being is breathing this breath, not just in and out the nose. Everything is breath. Changes, and it's in through the nose, and we exhale through the mouth. So we inhale through the nose, and we exhale through the mouth while repeating that phrase ongoing. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Let that light and life touch us, illuminating us and enlivening us. And then we inhale through the mouth and we exhale through the nose. Wow. While continuing to repeat the same phrase. Breath practices remain awake, alert. Again, the reminder is an aspect, a vehicle to help us develop mastery and willpower in alliance with divine will. A I know some people think, oh, the breath is to relax. Yes, it has its that method also, but in these instances, we're alert, we're awake, we're drawing that breath in, we're filling our being, and we're radiating back out again. We're taking in, as we do, our food, our nourishment, our air. And in a prayer, in a breath, we offer it back to the universe. And now we breathe in the mouth, and we exhale through the nose. So we're breathing in through the mouth, inhaling through the mouth. Excuse me. And did I just do that practice? We just did it? Okay, so now we're going in, inhaling through the mouth, and exhaling through the mouth. Inhaling through the mouth, and exhaling through the mouth. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine light. As I've said many times, Murshid sometimes, Hosman and Icon sometimes concluded the practice in this way, or it can continue. And the conclusion would be returning to the breath, breathing in through the nose and out through the nose, while we repeat silently on the breath the prayer Nayaz. So, for the benefit of us coming, entering into a rhythmic pattern together, if you'll allow me, I'll repeat those words. So we breathe in, Beloved Lord, Almighty God. And we breathe out through the rays of the sun. And in through the waves of the air. And out through the all-pervading life in space. Breathe in. Purify and revivify me, and hold your breath. And I pray and release, breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Breathe in, Beloved Lord, Almighty God. And out through the rays of the sun. And in through the waves of the air. Out through the all-pervading life and space, and in, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, heal my body, heart, and soul. One more time, Beloved Lord, Almighty God, out through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space, and in, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, out, heal my body, heart, and soul. as a reminder of what we talked about yesterday, just to, as a review, we were reading passages from Physicians of the Heart. I want to encourage people to consider purchasing that text, which is about to be published, but through the Sufi Rahaniyat International, they are doing pre-sales, and it, I believe, is really a profound text. It is a way of talking about the wazifas, the 99 names of God, in a medicinal aspect, in a pharmacological aspect, really, in a way, a pharmacological aspect. They are alchemical. They are medicinal. And when applied appropriately, these sacred names set up a vibration that can help to heal, balance, purify, strengthen, illuminate, all these different amazing attributes. Now, I will say, and I think we have a doctor amongst us that may agree, just as you wouldn't want to go to a pharmacy without knowledge, you just don't start pulling down things and mixing them. So it's always good to work in concert with a good spiritual companion, a kind of Sherpa, a guide that's maybe been on that path. And they can help you with that. The book has been a beautiful process over the last several years with Pir Shabda Khan's inspiration, Murshid Wali Ali's writing and consultation with Imam Bilal High, and Faisal Makadam, who is a psychologist and has contributed a lot to spiritual development and the psychological dimension coming together. So I want to just give that out, because we'll be publishing this on the website, and I want people to know that they can find their way to that text through the Rahaniyat website. And I offer my appreciation for this great effort. I also feel that in a time when Islam has come under so much criticism, it has the potential, this text, to bridge the East and West in a greater understanding of that sacred tradition beyond any kind of political terrorism that might come under the name or that associated with that tradition. It can illuminate the beauty of this spiritual religious path. And God willing, that will be soon. So yesterday we were reading from the text contributed by Faisal Makadam, and he talked about the psychological dimension and how frequently we can get misidentified with fractures or wounds. And again, it's almost like looking through that gauze. We think that's the way the world really is, or that filter. And the question is how to... and he also further said how there may be the tendency to develop defenses or a kind of shell to protect ourselves, which is natural. I mean, we want to in some ways protect that really vulnerable part. But it also takes a huge amount of energy to build that shell and to kind of keep that shell in place. And so what is constantly being offered to us, it is the opportunity to step out of that. And I had given an analogy to someone, and they told me recently it was very helpful to them. So if you don't mind, I'll share that with you. Years ago, I was working for the Science Museum in Virginia, Richmond, and I was asked to do an exhibition dealing with sea life. So I was studying the baleen whales and how they eat, and the crabs and how they function in their evolutionary stages. And one of the things that I thought was so interesting, I got fascinated with all of this, but the crabs, you know, they they're almost like this gelatinous mass, you know? And the way they grow is they first form what's called this paper bag shell. It's interesting because it's a nice, interesting metaphor for ourselves. We get a wound, we get a little bit of a veil, you know. Then that paperback hardens more and becomes a tin back. And then it hardens more and it becomes the hardback. And then that poor crab, that's all it can grow is confined to that shell. But then you know what it does? It gets the courage to kind of start backing out of the shell. And it cracks it from behind. And this like amoebic gelatinous thing crawls out of the shell, extremely vulnerable to its environment and all that's around it. It could just come and eat it up. But you know what it does? It stays close to that shell and kind of hides behind it. And then it starts to develop other layers of protection. But in this way, we can maybe crack the ego shell and develop a divine protection around us, you see? And we can just kind of keep growing and growing in that way. It's really kind of an extraordinary metaphor. It was very meaningful to the person that I shared it with, and they found it helpful. But you see, we see that a lot with the snake even shedding the skin. And there are many things that, you know, we see that with the little teeny acorn that has to break out of the shell to become the whole ego. You know, well, there is one manuscript, the Holy Manuscript of Nature. So in the teaching, Faisal is highlighting this. That we're looking for that little crack. And over time, the practices can help us to open more and more to these divine attributes, which perhaps initially we witness as concepts or something external to ourselves, but in truth, they're part of our very being. And once we recognize that, they start to resonate deeply within us, and hence, the significance of the performance of Wasifa and Zikr remembrance. And then they went on in the text to talk about the application of the attributes of divine forgiveness. And the first practice that we were given was Al-Ghafar, G-H-A-F-F-A-R. And this is the aspect of forgiveness. I like it. It's like sustainable energy or renewable resources. It's constantly there. It's constantly flowing. It's there no matter, even if we're participating in it. It's there. It's available. And it's so much so there that if we invoke that name, if we make ourselves aware of it, it can even protect us from our own faults so that we can heal. Because it's like, I'm sorry, it's maybe not a very delicate metaphor, but if we have a wound and it starts to scab over, you know, you have to just let it be there for a while till the scab can fall off. But if we keep picking at it, it just never can heal. And in some ways, these wounds are like that, that we just keep looking at that, and we don't see everything else that we are. You know what I'm saying? So this aspect of forgiveness, you know, and it teaches us. It teaches us that this renewable kind of sustainable forgiveness, when we learn it within, then we can experience that to circumstances external to ourselves as well. I love what one of my friends who's a senior minister at Unity Temple on the plaza, Tupatupti, he always says, you know, anger or not being able to forgive. And I will say this also. I want to say anger is a great protection when you need it. It keeps you safe. So I'm not saying don't ever feel that. And it's the fire element. It's an element of transformation. And it's the element that connects us elementally between the earth and the heaven. So I'm not disrespecting anger and its function and purpose. But hanging on to it and sort of reliving that, he says it's like eating poison and waiting for the other person to die. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? It's a really great thing to remember. How simple is that? You know, hanging on to that stuff, and we have to. That's part of the process, but it's like eating poison and waiting for the other person to die. It depends. You see, if we're looking at the tradition, and you brought in the concept of Buddhism, in Buddhism, it is said, there is an expression called loving kindness. Loving kindness is the wish for others to be happy as you wish yourself to be happy. Loving kindness is the wish for others to be happy as you wish yourself to be happy. Compassion is a whole other level. This is a level of really wishing everyone to be free from suffering. Suffering. Even to the extent that one would willingly take on the suffering of another in order to free them.
Wishing anything other than what is a self-tension.
I'm sorry, I can't hear
you. Wishing anything other than what it really is creates tension. My personal understanding of that is, why should I wish for happiness or relief or healing? Why should I not learn to embrace it as divine perfection as it is? Get rid of my judgment, which means I don't really need to heal you or myself.
That's
to
true.
Accept.
There is another level,
but,
though.
But another spiritual religion without specific efforts describes compassion as the acceptance that you are caught in a cage, that your cage creates pain. In accepting that, and also accepting that you and I are connected on another level which transcends the pain. So I borrow this from the Chinese, but they describe compassion. All these descriptions are never false.
And we live in a world where we use words to express concepts until they become real eyes.
Rather than defining compassion, it's so much more useful to feel it, to experience it, and not name it.
And there is another level of it as well, and where we don't see it as this or that. We don't see it as this or that. We see it as what naturally arises, the essence of all things. So that it's developmental. The loving kindness is very personal. We know we wish to be happy. We know we want to be healthy and happy. And then if we can begin to see that everyone else is another me that also wants that, we feel that. Then the next level is wanting to people to not suffer, whatever that suffering may be. And the next level, realizing that joy and suffering, that samsara, nirvana, that these are just concepts. And in the essence, it's all just pure energy.
So I'm trying to get a grasp on the concept of divine forgiveness. If there were that compassionate state that accepts all that is, there would be no reason to judge or hold anger or, I know I'm trying to exhort, but I'm trying to get a concept of this is famous.
It seems.
It's very elemental. The universe and beyond. And it seems like there's a special way to not allow whatever and take the poison and wait for the other to die. That's what I'm trying to do. I guess I'm trying to do is embrace the concept and see what it is.
Well, again, I just want to emphasize that these are coming from a body of teachings that are about to be presented to us in a book form, and they come from the names of, from the Quran, the holy names of Allah. And so that's what we're attempting to describe here, although it's really the indescribable in some ways, isn't it? And it's a very high ideal. As human beings, as participating in humanity, we've been born into a world of limitation. But it is the path to illumination and enlightenment. And perhaps I'm the only one that needs this teaching, that needs to understand greater dimensions of forgiveness. So thank you for participating with me in that learning. But I know that it's true.
There is a suffering involved in forgiving. There is a suffering.
And I also want to say this. Trust the process. Trust the process. Because something gets set into motion, you know, that just keeps going. So us being here together and sharing this will keep going. Deeper and deeper levels. You know, I personally have performed the practices, the base practices given to every initiate, the prayers and the breath. And I can say that constantly I'm learning more and more. I don't think I know it all. And God willing, I don't, because it keeps me enthusiastic and interested, and I discover more and more. So it is with these names. They will do their work and they'll understand deeper levels, God willing. So again, the first aspect is Al-Ghafar. This aspect of continual forgiveness, this renewal that veils our own faults, perhaps our own fault in not being able to forgive, or something, some shortcoming or failing in ourselves. And the next level that was described to us was Ghafur, G-H-A-F-U-R. And that aspect of forgiveness is an aspect that's penetrating, that reaches the core issue, the heart, the essence of what needs to be forgiven or healed. And we were given the analogy in the reading of the skin that contains water, and that if the skin becomes cracked, then the water can evaporate or leak from it. And especially in the nomadic desert cultures, this would mean death when you don't have the water. And the analogy was given in ourselves also. When there are those cracks and those leaks, then we also are not being nourished, and we can't sustain that nourishment because it's leaking out. It's escaping in some ways. We're talking almost a personality level here. Okay? In the other sense, it's all here. But is there a prevention in us participating or seeing it or experiencing it?
It's not where it lies, the same root, dramatically.
That's exactly right. Yes.
In Kofar, in ancient Semitic language that precedes Arabic and Hebrew, is asphalt, the tar.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to study and to have a knowledge of those vibrations and see those connections. And then you understand it's not just a word, but it is a vibration. So let us go back into the recitation of that practice, setting up that vibration of Yagafar, Yagafur. So, this. I'll be back. This is true, sweet. This constant flow of God, the beauty of this forgiveness that helps veil the fault of this thing that we're forgiving, and also to even veil our own faults so that we can heal enough to move to the other level of forgiveness, the level that allows the penetration of this divine quality to penetrate, as was written here. The meaning comes from the salve that is used by the bees to repair their hive, that's used in the desert cultures to heal the cracks in the leather.